This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin from home. Joining me also from home, Shyamala Ganesan. And as always, in this strange rotation we call life, we have Arvind Yuvaraj in the studio. Hello, everybody.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
So, as you have probably guessed, today it is a Throwback Tuesday, and we are throwing back 28 years to A Few Good Men and its many, many iconic monologues, although perhaps none more iconic than the one that we just heard.
I mean, if you didn't already know what movie we were talking about from just that line, I don't know whether there are many more lines that are so, that have become so emblematic of a particular movie. And I think we're going to go ahead and talk about this, delivered by an actor that is actually barely on screen for the rest of that film.
You know, I'm willing to bet that a lot of people don't know where that line is from because of how many times it's been sort of like mimicked and memed and sort of skewed away from the movie itself. I'm willing to bet 28 years on that a lot of people have no idea that it's from this movie with Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise.
So this movie, of course, is, like we said, A Few Good Men, and it is a movie that focuses on the tension, I think, between a courtroom and something that happens in Guantanamo Bay, basically looking for justice in a system that has very strict moral codes that they enforce on their own, and they here being the Marines. So Tom Cruise is essentially a hotshot lawyer who's being put in charge of a case that involves two Marines who are being accused of murder of another Marine. That's pretty much it, right?
That's pretty much it, yes. And it's a very 90s film. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It hits all the points of things that were big in the 90s, you know, the courtroom dramas, the packing in the stars, having them sort of riff off each other and having your classic Tom Cruise moments and your Jack Nicholson moments. I was really, really glad to revisit this. It's been a really long time. And so much of it reminded me of how different filmmaking is now, but also so much about how wonderful filmmaking was also back then.
And it also sort of like redefined the courtroom drama, or like elevated it to like a different level. And if you look at the movies that came after that tried to replicate what this movie did, some of them fell short. Some of them had to do more to reach those standards, because you can't make a movie like A Few Good Men today without adding in a bunch of other stuff, like lots of action, maybe lots of romance, maybe a bit of sci-fi. I don't know. But you can't make a movie that's purely about two people who get accused, one lawyer who's kind of not really a lawyer, who's just, you know, floating through the system, trying to defend them against a very rigid system that has accused them of this crime. You know what I mean? That doesn't fly like in today's cinematic world. You'd have to be a lot more. So it's kind of surprising to see how successful this movie was when it was so contained.
Well, also Aaron Sorkin, and that's probably why he writes so much more for TV now.
For sure.
Because really, these are the kinds of stories that I think you're less likely to see on film and much more likely to see on television these days.
I will say that in the course of our throwbacks, and this is a part of our show that I'm very glad we do, simply because a lot of the times I think when we throw back to something that is as iconic as A Few Good Men or last week Jurassic Park, what happens is that a few moments tend to stick out. I would say for every movie that you think your brain remembers 90% of, you probably remember 5. And it's the key standout moments that you are waiting for, those highs and those lows. And what you miss is everything in between. So we mentioned this earlier. I didn't realize how little Jack Nicholson was in the film. He's in, I would say, 15% of the film, if that. His name hovers over everything. But for most of the time, it takes place inside rooms and inside sort of rooms that look like they smell like pizza and Chinese food, because it's just a bunch of lawyers trying to decide, how do we attack this? Which way do we go? You're right when you use the word contained. It's a very contained film, despite the fact that it tackles these big themes. It's not all sort of grand sweeping moments. A lot of it happens within smaller spaces and in smaller conversations.
I'm interested to know, upon rewatching for you guys, did you find it as compelling? Were you as absorbed? Because I absolutely was, but I'm not sure whether that's just some of my nostalgia also bleeding into it.
I found it slightly more compelling than before, because I sort of, when watching it, I sort of started missing movies that were driven by performances. And this is a movie that's driven purely by people's performances. I don't think it works if you didn't have Tom Cruise, or if you don't have Demi Moore, or if you don't have Jack Nicholson doing what Jack Nicholson does. That's a product of the 90s, right? And when watching it now, I kind of miss those performances a lot, where you get someone into a movie purely because it is this actor, and you know what they're going to bring. Not because you need a role, but because you need this actor to play this role. I found it way more compelling than I did compared to like the first time I saw it, which was the last time I saw it must have been like 15, 20 years ago at least.
I found it as compelling, but I think through the haze of nostalgia, in all honesty, and also because of the Aaron Sorkin-ness of it. Everybody in this movie is the most articulate person you have ever met in your life. They know exactly the correct insult at the correct moment. If they're going to hurt you, they're going to come for the jugular, and everybody attacks it the same way. And that's because, you know, Aaron Sorkin movies and Aaron Sorkin shows are basically arenas for Aaron Sorkin avatars. We all know that. And so I think this movie very much has all of that. It was still compelling, but different.
Yeah, the Sorkin-ness really came through in how much people walked and talked. I mean, really, that's something that...
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's just... That's one of the things that have changed in film. The space for things to develop, for people to just walk and talk or sit in a room and talk. The sheer amount of dialogue that's in this film is definitely something that we don't see anymore. And I greatly started missing courtroom dramas after watching this film, because when was the last time we ever saw a courtroom drama on the big screen anymore? Even really the small screen for that matter.
No, I mean, we wouldn't. Like today, this would be something that maybe won awards at some film festival somewhere and did a couple of rounds, and we would get it like 3 months after its release in those festivals. But also, I think the dialogue and who says those words of lines of dialogue is important, because this film is like stacked. It has a few people and like Jack Nicholson, a lot of these people just show up for like 5 to 7 minutes total in the whole movie. And I don't know why, like Kiefer Sutherland, I think, shows up a maximum of 15 minutes if you would compile all his scenes, maybe even less. And he was a big star by then. I think Cuba Gooding Jr. is there for
for 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
I had even forgotten he was in this film.
Same. So he shows up, maybe cameo, maybe he wasn't as famous, I don't know, he exits. And there are a lot of other people like that who show up, give like really good performances, Kevin Bacon, another one, and then just leave.
I think, you know, the dialogue-heavy nature of it is one thing. The length of scenes, I think, is another. I think that if we were to tell this story today, the editing would be a lot more frenetic. There would be a lot more energy in an attempt to infuse some forward motion into this story that essentially kind of hinges on a few things. Was a code red ordered? Were you in this place at this time? We don't even get to see the accused that much. There aren't that many sort of tense montages of them, you know, mulling over their fate, for example. We don't really get that stuff. I do miss that sense of having patience, of trusting the audience to have patience with you, and of you having patience with the audience to go, look, this is the film, okay? It's just, it's a case. It's a courtroom drama. That's what we have.
And I think also what's pleasantly surprising is it's not like we don't have the patience. The film doesn't stretch it. It's not like watching a movie from, say, the 50s, where you sometimes do feel like you need to put on your old movie hat. This film is enough for you to be engaged.
So we're talking today about A Few Good Men. After this, we're going to continue talking about the film on our throwback and also examining, I think, some of the ways in which it's aged and whether it's aged well or otherwise. If you love A Few Good Men, let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be right back on Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony, BFM 89.9.
You're wrong. I do know you. Daniel Alistair Caffey, born June 8, 1964 at Boston Mercy Hospital. Your father's Lionel Caffey, former Navy judge, advocate, and attorney general of the United States, died 1985. You went to Harvard Law, then you joined the Navy, probably because that's what your father wanted you to do. And now you're just treading water for the 3 years you've got to serve in the JAG Corps, just kind of laying low till you can get out and get a real job. If that's the situation, that's fine. I won't tell anyone. But it's my feeling that if this case is handled in the same fast food, slick ass, Persian bazaar manner with which you seem to handle everything else, then something's gonna get missed. And I wouldn't be doing my job if I allowed Dawson and Downey to spend any more time in prison than absolutely necessary because their attorney had predetermined the path of least resistance.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvind. Today, we are throwing it back 28 years to 1992's A Few Good Men, directed by Rob Reiner, written by Aaron Sorkin, starring Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, and actually Kevin Pollak, even though everybody says Jack Nicholson. But as we've established, Jack Nicholson isn't in it that much. Okay, so I just wanted to ask you guys, how did you feel the movie aged? Because I think that there are certainly some things that really, really, really earmark it as a 90s film and in a way that is both good and bad.
You know, I think it's a good sign of how the movie has aged for me that I actually forgot Demi Moore was in this movie until she showed up on screen. And that movie kind of, the movie, for all that I actually really love it, and I love all of the performances in it, in this day and age, watching it, it was so clear that she was written, her role was written to be second fiddle and nothing else. It feels like this is a role that would never have been written today, and for good reason, perhaps, because it's almost like her entire arc exists to be the, I know better than you, Tom Cruise. Oh, no, turns out that you actually knew better all along kind of arc. And I have to say, it wasn't so bad that it irritated me. But looking at it through today's lens, I'm just like, you could have done better with that.
I think you could see how it aged just basing it off Tom Cruise alone, because I know that he was designed or engineered to be this sort of very charming, this kind of cool guy who doesn't take things seriously but knows everything all at the same time. And if you watch it today, he was slightly annoying. And I found him slightly
really annoying.
Yeah, I found him like, I was like, is he supposed to be?
I'm in the minority. I actually really enjoyed his performance, but please go on.
See, that's interesting because I know that I enjoyed his performance the first time I saw it. But watching it again, and I watched it over the weekend, it was kind of annoying to see how he was behaving because I don't know where that changed or when that changed, but it definitely changed. So just basing it off him alone, ignoring all the other people around him, that showed me that, yeah, this is how they sort of wrote people in the 90s to be heroes. I don't think this would fly today if you put him in that same position.
I completely agree, and I disagree about Demi Moore. So my thing with watching this movie was that I realized who the hero is supposed to be. I'm supposed to think that Tom Cruise, with all his charming, devil may care grin and sort of sharp riposts, I think I'm supposed to think he's the hero. Instead, I'm like, you're spoiled. Mm-hmm. You are a privileged child of a former attorney general. You're coming in here with all your daddy issues and playing God with these people's lives. And the person who actually does all the work, who pushes for this case to even go anywhere, who does the legwork, who does basically everything but is just deemed not showy enough to be a good trial lawyer, that character is Demi Moore. So actually, without Demi Moore's character, Joanne Galloway, nothing happens, you know, if not for her, if not for her highlighting the fact that this is probably a code red and all these different things. You know, she's the real engine of the movie. And so watching it, every moment that she was on, I felt my soul, you know, soothed. And every moment that Tom Cruise was striding around, you know, being all maverick but a lawyer, I struggled with it a little bit more. And I think that that has to do with a conversation we were having before this also about what stars are and what kind of performances shore up their idea of what makes a movie star. And I think for a long time, Tom Cruise was that irreverent, too handsome for his own good, secretly smart, you know, wisecracking guy. And that has shifted over time. And I agree with you, Arvind. I don't know if he would have been written that way today or for as long.
Go ahead. I was just going to say it's exactly for those reasons why the role of Demi Moore irritated me. She didn't irritate me. The treatment, so the lens that the movie gives us to her character irritated me, because it's obvious that we're not meant to see her that way. It's just that we understand it to be that way now. But I think to maybe defend Tom Cruise a little bit, although I'll preface it by saying I am actually a groupie, so I'm biased. but I think that one of the things I realized in this film is that we often undersell how good an actor Tom Cruise is. And there are shades of it that comes through in this role, that despite the Tom Cruise-ness that they want for the role, he actually plays it well enough that over the course of the movie, you can see him changing. You can see him realizing that these Marines that he's representing and he doesn't actually want to go to court for are people. And to me, the reason why it works is that you empathize with him on that journey where he begins to see people as people as well. So it's a classic growth film for him as well as a courtroom drama. And I personally think that he did a good job in that role.
I think just he did
a very
too.
90s job.
Yeah.
I think he did too. I don't think either of us were necessarily saying that Tom Cruise didn't do a good job, more that the movie is such a product of its time.
Oh, absolutely.
That it had the gall to put forth like this character, you know, and assume that we would all immediately go, yes, that's the guy. And I think back in the day, sure. But now I don't think this sort of hero is necessarily what we crave.
Yeah. But I also miss that performance from Tom Cruise, because like I said before, you know, I miss those kinds of performance-driven characters and films. And Tom Cruise, even though he is very active in cinema and in Hollywood now, he sort of boxed himself into a standard role. Like he is Ethan
Hunt. An Ethan Reacher role.
Yeah. That's it. It's Ethan Reacher and that's about it. He doesn't... the charisma that he had in this movie, the sort of the humor that he had... The smile, the range of acting that he shows in A Few Good Men is sort of absent. And it has been absent for about 10, maybe 12, 15 years now. But going back to the Demi Moore stuff, I was surprised to see how she sort of interacted with Jack Nicholson in this movie, which is something that I didn't catch the first time. And I also think that maybe Jack Nicholson was cast for her and not so much for Tom Cruise, because they don't have a lot of chemistry with one another. But she is being bullied by Jack Nicholson in that one very famous scene. And I'm starting to think that maybe because Aaron Sorkin wrote it and it was supposedly it was sort of progressive for its time, Jack Nicholson was cast to be her bully and not Tom Cruise's bully. And that's how I see it now.
I think Jack Nicholson could do anything. I think this generally, and I think in this movie, he really showcases that. You know, that infamous courtroom scene that we've been talking about, right? The one that everybody knows this movie for. It's just a tight shot of his face.
Yeah.
It doesn't even budge. And he just delivers it. And I'm like, that's worth the price of admission alone. You know, that scene, it's famous. It's so famous for a reason. And I think Jack Nicholson manages to put so much of his imprint on the movie, again, for a reason. Because sometimes when you have an actor with charisma of this volume, you just let him have it.
No, I agree. I was, you know, sometimes you build these things up in your head so much that when you revisit them, you're thinking, maybe it wasn't that great after all. Maybe now it's going to be cheesy because I've heard this scene played so many times. And then I watched it and I was just like, I'm arrested for 10 minutes. It's an amazing scene. But going back to that scene that Aryan was talking about, one of the things I realized when I was watching, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's essentially a scene where Jack Nicholson says some very, very sexist, bullying things to Demi Moore. Tom Cruise and a bunch of other people are there as well. It made me think of how even lines like that and dialogue like that and performances like that stage the way that the film stages it probably would not exist on film today. It would be framed in a very different context. There's something about the way it's shown in a very, it reminds me of the scene from Philadelphia where Tom Hanks is in the spa and these two older men make these really homophobic jokes, right? Again, they're staged in such a normal way, so normal that it almost feels like you may not notice it happened. And then you realize how awful it is. And I think there's something quite genius about being able to stage it like that, which just in today's world would be too fine a line for us to play on.
No, they would have like immediately made you understand that it was a super bad thing to do. It would have been like crystal clear. And I think that's another thing about the 90s. They use these words and they say these things, but they never tell you it's bad. It's for you to make your own judgment. Like, you know it's bad, but they're not villainized for it. It's like you said, it's normalized. They say things as if it's stuff they talk about every day. And if it was in a movie today, they would have, the music would have been different. The way he said it would have been different.
Just the tone of it would have been really different.
Yeah, yeah. I also wanted to ask you guys if you could take the music seriously. Because I kind of couldn't, because it's been parodied so much and there's an episode of Community that sort of parodies it at the same time using that same music. Could you guys, every time that one famous signature theme pops up, could you guys take the movie seriously?
No, it felt very TV yeah. Background. Yeah.
I was on ship Sorkin. I didn't care. it's all of a package. But regardless, I think basically, A Few Good Men is a rich rewatch. It does merit it. I think if you only remember a few scenes from it, it's worth going back and looking at the thing in its entirety. So, let us know whether you're planning to rewatch A Few Good Men. Have you enjoyed it in the past? Is it a movie you like? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. If you want to hear more from us on social media, we are BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.